Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Daily French Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer. Today, joined from Johannesburg, with Hardy Dars loudly crowing occasionally in the background, Sara Gowan. Sara, how are you doing?
I'm fine. It proves that I'm here live and ready to go.
Indeed it does. I'm also joined today by Mr. Michael Morris, who, like me, is in a Cape Town, a slightly muggy, humid Cape Town. How are you doing, Michael?
Fine, thank you. If a little damp and sweaty, but otherwise in fine fettle, thank you.
Indeed. And I hope everyone in the sort of northern half of the country is managing to survive the torrent of rain. I saw that there were evacuations being called for along the Vaal River, which is a bit nerve-wracking, but I hope everyone is all right. All right, so let's get into the news stories of today. And of course, we have to be talking about the big news story of the last week, and that is whether the government of national unity is over. Now, I'm on a group of colleagues who occasionally posts memes, and they posted a Sunday Times headline, ANCDA scramble to save GNU, as a headline on Sunday, and they just gave it the caption, "We are so back." And it really seems like the GNU is kind of in this weird position of a bit of a Mexican standoff, where no one necessarily wants to jump towards crashing the thing. And we can get into some of the details of why that might be. But we had the Deputy President, Paul Machatila, over the past 48 hours or so, being very aggressive publicly about the GNU. He firstly said on Monday in a meeting that the ANC had never depended on the DA in the GNU, that there were all these other parties who were part of the GNU who were just as important as the DA, and that they didn't need the DA. He went on to say that the ANC will be deciding what to do on Monday, or that is today, in their National Working Committee about how to respond to the DA refusing to vote for the budget. Machatila said that they, the other GNU partners, are not a sideshow. They must feature prominently in how we move forward. We will meet all the GNU leaders to discuss how we move forward. He said the DA's role should not be exaggerated. I guess the implication here is that other parties in the GNU might get more ministerial seats if they took them away from the DA. Machatila said that if he was a minister who was implementing a budget that that the minister had voted against, that he would be ashamed to show up and implement it. He was speaking to the Ahmed Katrada Legacy Business Breakfast in Ilovo about the future of the DA in the Government of National Unity. And he says that the DA, despite saying that they support, that they were committed to the economy, voted against the budget. He said, "You want to work as a minister, but you have not voted for the budget. But you think that's okay, you know? I'm not sure what they were thinking. I would be ashamed. Where do they think the budget comes from?" At the same time, Ramaphosa has been pushing back on DA criticisms of the budget by saying that the budget was directed at growing the economy and that the DA is just making claims because it wants a political win here. Well, there was a really nice opinion piece written by Tim Cohen about this, which says, you know, the government of national unity is a really good thing because it has given us the proper possibility of increased business confidence, of keeping the EFF and MK out of government, of starting the country on a path to some actual economic reform, on getting some departments to work better. And yet at the same time, can it really continue if the DA can't trust the ANC whatsoever? So I put a lot out there on the table. Sara, let me start with you. What's your take on where the GNU is at? Do you agree with me that this is all kind of a Mexican standoff? Tim Cohen says that there are suggestions in the ether out there that the ANC will try to keep the DA in the GNU, but punish them by removing two ministers. I don't know if the DA is going to stick around. What do you think is going on?
Well, let's put it this way. You have to acknowledge the spin element of what Paul Machatila is saying, because he is flirting with the truth a bit in saying he would feel ashamed. I've never seen an ANC minister or MP feel ashamed about anything. And they've not been ashamed about the fact that they've pretended that they were passing budgets over the years to grow the economy, and the economy's just slid and slid and slid, and is going to slide further. And the whole purpose of GNU, whether the ANC likes it or not, it's not a, you know, the ANC invites you in to sort of have tea and agree with everything they do. But they don't, whether they don't understand it or they just, it just goes against, once now they're in it, and now that they relied on the DA to get President Ramaphosa elected to the presidency of the country, if they genuinely feel that the only purpose here is to be some sort of cheerleader to everything the ANC does. Now, that is, you know, you'd have to be either naive or stupid to believe that that's what was going to happen, because the whole purpose, and the whole purpose of the ANC ultimately choosing to go with the DA, was because it became apparent very quickly that the voters, that's what they wanted. That's where they saw the benefits lying, in being in this situation where things could improve without, you didn't have to say, the DA didn't have to say, or wasn't likely to say, you know, we did it. It's, you sat down as colleagues and you said, you know, we've got, you know, we've really got to suggest some changes here. The ANC could own as much as anybody else, if not more so, because they are the largest of the minority, of a minority-sized party. I've got the impression, both from, well, Tim Cohen's article is worth reading, but from the original article that Peter Dutoy wrote in the News 24, when he tracked the process of how we got to this point in the last few weeks. And they clearly, there seemed to be real confidence that they were on the cusp of an agreement between the ANC and the DA. And the NEC specifically saw Ramaphosa walked in and said, we will not be treated like this by the DA. And so this, the clear seeds that they weren't going to regard the DA with the respect, shall we say, that they should have, to and to have found a way to own a better policy that would enable growth. And, you know, for me, the naivety of, to some extent, the naivety of the big business sector to write letters to both the DA and the ANC about, you know, keeping the thing together. Well, you know, that's not very helpful if you're not analyzing what's actually going on. And the impression one has is that the president is really itching to get somehow to get the DA out, but he doesn't want to do it. So if they can, a couple of DA ministers to replace them with the guys who voted for them, then the DA will have to react. But I think the problem is that with the amount of spin and dishonesty that's come out in a lot of what the ANC said has happened, I just don't think the DA ultimately can continue to trust them. I mean, it's really been, it's been like a tennis game. It's been a to and fro within the ANC. I mean, the DA almost had to sit on the sidelines and watch while, you know, the good officers of the ANC thump their chests at each other. I'm not sure they can be trusted. So I think it's the next game in the sort of standoff is what the ANC decides to do with its working committee today.
So, Michael, what do you make of how things are at the moment? I think it's interesting that a lot of the reporting seems to suggest that actually Ramaphosa, contrary to many of the sort of preconceived notions that people have, has actually been one of the people who's been more keen on torpedoing the GNU and seems very personally upset about everything that's going on. So, firstly, that's kind of an interesting thing. And secondly, I mean, you know, what do you make of the situation now? I think one of the reasons why no one is in a hurry to scupper this is that, you know, while me and many of the people who listen to the show think the GNU is really not working out, it remains pretty popular in the country. Now, we haven't seen polling since the budget debacle stuff, so we don't really know exactly if attitudes have changed. But that Brentos polling we saw relatively recently suggested that the GNU remains pretty popular, with about 60% of the country thinking it's doing a good job. What's your take on all of this?
I have quite mixed feelings, actually. In a staff discussion this morning that we were all talking about this at great length, I kind of ventured the idea that I thought that there was, in fact, a great deal to be gained from the DA remaining doing, I think the phrase I used was the prosaic business of government, and showing that government can work if it's run properly. And it's quite, you know, they're quite simple steps to doing this. You have a minister who is committed to doing the job properly, who is evidently seems quite able to work with senior officials, getting the civil service to kind of think a bit differently, having putting down kind of programs and targets and whatever is required. I mean, I've never done that kind of job, but I can picture the sort of basic things you need to do, and you need to keep in touch with your people and make sure you're all on the same page and kind of keep working towards an objective. And it is quite an unsexy, politically prosaic business. You're basically just running this huge affair, and you've got to try and do it as effectively as you possibly can. Now, the importance for me of that is less really just doing the job than what that represents to our society. I can't remember the figures, and I should have looked them up because I think it is quite important. But the number of people who've steadily drifted away from the political process over the past 15 years, I think, is very considerable. It runs into the millions. And the consequences of that is that our politics are, you know, become increasingly a less serious affair because fewer people are invested in it. And I think if just a few ministers doing a proper job can begin to change people's minds about the efficacy and the importance of governance, of public politics, I think that would be a major contribution. But having said all that, looking at Tim's very good piece, and some of the others that have been written in some of the other media too, that's writing from the other side. Tim calls out the bulk of the media in South Africa basically for trotting out a sort of ANC line that's been leaked to them, and they've just fallen for it and run with it. And there's a very great risk, I think, in that. But Tim's piece, you know, basically saying the DA's proposals for a compromise budget, one that, you know, was not wildly demanding. It wasn't making the arrogant demands, so-called, that the ANC apparently claimed the party was making. It was just really sensible things. There's just a good quote. I'm just going to find it here in Tim's piece, where he says, all of these ideas in the DA's proposal are exactly, precisely what is necessary. Nothing, in my view, among this group of ideas could reasonably constitute being unreasonable or overplaying your hand. And they're all geared at the objective that the GNU in its initial statement of intent said was the primary national objective, which was to grow the economy, get growth going, get jobs developed, and so on. So in the context of that, you know, I do need to perhaps revisit my certainty that perhaps at this stage the DA should try its best to stay in there and sustain this for a bit longer, if, you know, to get the idea into the public mind that there really is a way to do politics better and this is how you do it. I think that would be good for the DA. But having read Tim's piece, you know, I do see, even he himself says he thinks he thinks the DA is a great idea. I mean, the GNU, and that, you know, the DA staying there is a great idea. But, you know, so he argues the case very well because he proceeds from pretty much the point that I've been raising. And I think what emerges is, you know, a picture of the ANC behaving like power hungry scoundrels who don't realize that they're losing power every step of the way. The power is just falling off. And it's, you know, it's become a kind of delusional enterprise. I just happened to see in the Daily Maverick piece, is that also today? No, 6th of April, yesterday, by Feral Hafiji, in which she quotes Ndumiseni Ntuli, the ANC's chief whip in parliament. And he's complaining about, you know, the business community having the temerity, the letter that Sara was referring to, having the temerity to come along and suggest to the government how it should be doing its best. You know, the ANC would do jolly well, I think, despite the, as Sara says, the certain naivety right across the business community. We've seen this often. But the ANC would do rather well, actually, to pay a bit of attention to some of the things that business leaders are, in fact, saying. And that, you know, there are steps that they ought to be taking and taking more seriously. So, yeah, I think quite a difficult decision for the DA. I think so far it's done the right thing in staying there and leaving the ball in the ANC's court. But it might, if you know, if the ANC starts doing ridiculous things, would not be out of character, like dismissing ministers and so on. The DA would clearly have to demonstrate its resolve at that point. But yeah, interesting times, I think, indeed. Perhaps times that do call for some decisive responses.
Indeed. Sarah, any final thoughts?
Just to really, the fact that they've made the snide remark about the business sector, given how much they've relied on the business sector to get involved in improving things in the last couple of years, I think is rather
right.
Rich.
That's a really good point. Like all of the, business must come on board, must build the country together. But then when business tries to have input, it's like, no, stuff off. You're here for all your money, but you don't get any input.
Absolutely. And the other point I want to make just about it'll be interesting to see if they do fire two DA ministers who they are. I mean, if you take, somebody mentioned McPherson, the Minister of Public Works. Now, what's got very little attention is that he, together with the police minister, have created an entity to tackle the construction mafia. And they came together as mature adults should, created this entity, created this function in about October, November, I forget exactly when, and they're starting to see real success. They're starting to see people being arrested and then, you know, being in line for prosecution. And the problem for the ANC is this shows that, and with the help of a well-meaning ANC minister, together they're actually tackling a problem. They're showing that if you actually have the will, and you get together and you behave like mature adults, and you look at a real strategy, you can actually get something done. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing for the DA. Despite the fact that it was a cross-party line cooperation, which is what one should see in the GNU.
Yeah, I know. I've been watching the police minister, not with a keen eye, but with enough of an eye to notice that I think there's some. He definitely seems to be more able than many of the other ANC ministers, and it's interesting you point out that this has been a sort of rare area of cooperation between the parties. I see someone in the comments is asking about, you know, what is needed before a snap election before 2029. This is, there are several circumstances which could play out in parliament that could result in a snap election. It just kind of depends on how unstable the political system gets if the GNU does collapse. So it's not impossible, but it is, I think at this stage, still quite unlikely, particularly because the ANC, I think, will sacrifice an awful lot to prevent another election at this stage. But we'll have to see. Okay. Let us move on to our next story. And this is, shall we say, a little bit less dramatic in scope, but still kind of an interesting topic to talk about. And that is a report in the news media about a group of people around in Pretoria who were near Cullinan, the Rafiwa township. They were heading to work in transport that was organized for them by their company that they work for, which point they were stopped by a group of people who were wearing Taxi Association reflector jackets and were left stranded on the side of the road on Friday. This is apparently the latest in a string of acts where taxi patrollers in the area have been accused of targeting private vehicles and shuttle services because they are competing with the taxis in the area. A team from the Sowetan watched as some workers were left stranded on the side of the road after taxi patrollers stopped their vehicle and ordered them out of it. Some of them had to hitchhike. Others tried to get other transport arranged for them. One of the women who was tossed out of the vehicle on Friday said she had to walk to work the day before. She said, quote, "I work with a disabled child and I have to be at work early. Yesterday, I had to walk here from work because I did not have the money to take a taxi. The taxi marshal said if I call my boss to come and fetch me, they won't allow me to get into her car because they expect me to pay." Another woman who was ejected from that car said, I have a child. My budget does not allow me to take the taxi at the taxi rank. If I take a normal taxi, it would mean I spend more than 800 rand a month. But with the arrangement we have with the other taxis, I pay 500 rand a month. A spokesperson for the National Taxi Council has said that this is illegal if it is indeed happening. Sorry, let me start with you. We had a really fascinating presentation from a consultant on transport systems recently who talked about taxis as both the villain and the hero of South Africa's transport story. On one hand, taxis get at least 16 million people to work every single day, and they do it relatively cheaply, and they do it pretty efficiently, which is remarkable. It's an entire public transport system that's being done privately. On the other hand, this gangsterism and thuggish behavior is so widespread in the industry. That same consultant was talking about, I mean, obviously this story here talks about how it affects the passengers, but we've also seen the number of murders that go on in the taxi industry. That same consultant said that significant numbers of taxi drivers that he knows have been killed by other taxi drivers competing for positions and routes. What's your take on the story?
It's very interesting because the taxi industry, unlike many of the bus companies around the country, receives very, very little financial support from the government. But on the other hand, you know, there is the concern about the involvement of police officials, politicians, etc., as taxi bosses. So there's sort of potentially a load of nefarious interests. But Andrew Shaw made a very important point. He said, on the one hand, I mean, you've got taxi drivers working extremely hard at the risk of annoying the rest of us by driving badly to get their routes, you know, to get people through their routes and back so they can actually make money. And a number of the taxi bosses, organizations that represent them are canny operators. I mean, they are entrepreneurs, but it seems to be the point that what you probably need is a combination of stick and carrot, is you've got to have more regulation of the industry. But my sense from what Andrew was saying is that in return, you can sort of point the industry in a direction of actually increasing their ability to create more markets by becoming actually more legit and behaving better. By in exchange for that, there are a whole lot of options that can be offered or made available or opened up to the taxi industry that can expand their reach and make them more money. So in a way, what happens is they've taken a model that's been extremely successful up to a point, but they can't increase their investment isn't bringing them increasing returns. But you're almost looking at the possibility of tightening up the way they operate and therefore, you know, becoming less mafiosi-like and alienating absolutely everybody else on the one hand, and really getting them to understand about the possibility of buying in as a more formal industry to actually improve their investment and expansion potential. But of course you need, as we've seen, you'd need a coalition of the willing. And I think the problem is that those people who might be preventing it from a political point of view or not tackling it are less than willing, either because of a sense of weakness or a sense of, you know, they're scoring directly financially, whatever the position may be. But like most things, the possibility is there. And you saw to some extent with the way the city of Cape Town dealt, you know, stared the taxi industry down, was it last year, the year before? It's when people operate like mafiosi, it's about power. It's about staring down the power and then talking. So I think the potential's there, but right now everyone's just pushed, the taxi drivers, the taxi owners, the people who have to drive around the taxis or not, and then, of course, the people who use the taxis, which, you know, it's an invaluable – there is no alternative to the taxi industry at the moment, and certainly that's what came out from Andrew Shaw's talk, is that the other forms of public transport are just not enough to make up the balance, to make up for the taxi industry.
Yeah, no, I'm just constantly considering the question, how can we turn the powers of the taxi industry to good rather than to ill? Michael, what's your take on this story? I think you know, we're kind of seeing here that the in this story, the sort of visceral impact that a story like this has on ordinary people's lives. You know, when you don't have free market competition, it's very poor people who are going to get screwed over.
Yeah. I'm glad that Sarah mentioned the word mafia in her comments now, because it reminded me of what she'd said in our pre-show chat about contrasting the situation in the taxi industry with what is potentially beginning to happen in the construction industry, in line with McPherson's construction mafia collaboration with or initiative with the Minister of Police. And I think, you know, it's quite clear in a situation like this, the use of force that we're seeing being applied by an economic player is really just filling a void that's created by the absence or the vacation of policing of the state power. And so long as that pertains, you know, there is that kind of incentive, which is a negative one. I've always been very attracted to the idea of trying to avoid criminalization as much as possible, and instead to incentivize better behavior. I think it develops a different way of thinking about problems. If you can get people to see that there is some benefit in behaving a certain way, then you don't need to run after them with a stick and an arrest warrant. But clearly here, it's a complex of factors, and we've quite far down the road. We've seen this with construction mafia. There are all kinds of other mafia also. It doesn't take a lot in South Africa to be completely disregarding of what the law says or where the police are, because there's no expectation that any punishment or any consequences are going to follow. So I think this is very much a case in point. And at the same time, you know, we're looking at a vital industry, as you both said, that is doing amazing things. And the trick, therefore, is to figure out, you know, this requires a good couple of ministers sitting down and saying, you know, what can we practically do over the next 12 months to actually, you know, draw the taxi industry into much more of a legitimate relationship, get them to see the advantages of conducting themselves differently and expanding their market share and offering greater security to passengers and to road users and so on. And that's what it takes. I mean, in a way, it comes back to my point about, you know, why the prosaic business of government is so important. It's all these little things that do begin to make people think differently and, you know, begin to concede, well, maybe there's a point in my voting. Maybe there's a point in my choosing one party rather than another, because look what they're doing. It's just one little illustration. But as far as, you know, here and now, how awful to be people who depend on taxis, and this is what might happen to your working day. You know, everything goes pear-shaped. Very dangerous also, I'm sure. So it's a serious thing that he's not getting the right attention.
I agree completely that there are many problems in South Africa that could be solved, or at least significantly improved, by simply applying simple rules consistently, fairly, and effectively across the society. And that's the very first step in cracking apart mafias and things like that. There's no special carve-outs, no exemptions. All right, let's move on to our last story very quickly, because we're running out of time. This is a report from News24. The Gauteng Health Department has awarded a multi-million rand tender to produce uniform shirts to a Johannesburg company, which is allegedly owned by a friend of the Health MEC. This company, to make matters worse, also has a bit of a dodgy history. It was deregistered by the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission in 2023 due to not submitting financial records, I believe, is the reason. And yet, despite the fact that it has this sort of, you know, kind of unsure, dodgy past, got this 2.5 million rand tender. When asked about this, the MEC for Health in Gauteng, what her relationship was with the owner of this company, said, no, we're not friends. I know her, but only from a distance. Somewhat awkwardly, the reporters found Facebook pictures of her hanging out with the owner of this company, where the owner of the company was tweeting out, or rather Facebooking out, pictures of the two of them together at a DJ booth with the following caption: "Busy 12th Sunday of 2024. Yo, leadership spinning the discs. Yes, what a day. Cheers to all the mothers in the world." Which suggests that you've got a little bit more of a closer relationship than only knowing each other from a distance. she reiterated in writing she had no relationship beyond seeing this person in a few public gatherings, and that, "I did take pictures with her during the election campaign, which is not out of the ordinary." I'm not quite sure if that's the case. Michael, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, talking about, you know, absence of consequences, which is not to say there's, you know, anything amiss. The instances like this need to be thoroughly investigated before we can really make anything like a bold allegation. But nevertheless, aren't we so familiar with these sorts of stories? I mean, day after day, and the public has become inured to them. This is the worst of it. The complete shamelessness, to use a phrase that you both used, I think, earlier in the show. It's just a horror, and you know, in a proper robust democracy, this would immediately prompt a completely different response from a governing official or governing department. That, you know, this has got to be looked into thoroughly. We get to whatever you need to do, but what you bear in mind is your duty to the public, to be accountable and to make sure that government is clean. Instead of having, you know, I know this person and, you know, but only distantly, and there's nothing to worry about, and so on, which is very dismissive and very disregarding of the rest of us, of the public, who are not spinning discs and having a gay time at these glitzy functions. Yeah.
It's also worth mentioning that the entrepreneur who is accused here has also an ANC branch member as well. So it's not just, you know, like they're just personal friends as well. But Sara, any thoughts on this before we close up for today?
Well, I think this is quaint. You know, we can relax a bit. It's business as usual. It's like, you know, so 2 years ago, you know, it's what we got excited about then, which also is a problem. But essentially, the big issues that we've been talking about before this are really about, that's where the change has to happen for this sort of thing to stop happening. Clearly, it's so, you know, patronage and corruption is so embedded. It is literally a way of life. But on the other hand, you know, these purveyors of snazzy T-shirts or whatever have been exposed. I mean, that's, you know, the other thing is that despite the fact that the world is crashing around us and the South African potentially going down the economic tubes, there's still journalists writing about, what is it, 3 million? I mean, chicken feed. But, you know, it's reassuring nonetheless in a sort of way.
Yeah, quite right.
Indeed. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. We will see you on the Daily Friend show tomorrow. Cheers, everyone. Have a wonderful day.